Hello, and welcome to episode 81 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the show where the world of the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mask from Mars, and this week I'm joined by comic artist, writer, and creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Writer, Down the Tubes contributor, and our very own Captain Marvel, Tony Esmond.
That's nice.
Which Captain Marvel am I talking about?
Well, they're all good, equally as good as each other, I'm going to say, because that'll stop anyone shouting at me, won't it?
There you go. Yeah. And you are quite right.
Yes.
But I don't know whenever.
It's early days.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
If you hear,
I love the only two bits of hate mail we've ever had are about me. I love that. That's good.
Start as you mean to go on. Yes, and we're also joined by the man behind the Comics Anonymous website, and he's an all-round top chap, Gary Watson.
Hey.
There we go.
You all right,
Gary?
I'm dying now. I had to put it on cough, mute cough again.
Do you need to cough?
No, I've done it. It's fine.
I can't believe.
This is pro.
What did I say just before we started
recording? I know, I got excited.
Be quiet and let Gary say hello before you jump.
Do you want to do that again?
Oh, dear. Anyway, shall I just...
You were doing this on Mondays when I wasn't it?
Oh, dear. Well, we might as well just crack on, haven't we? Yeah. I'm sure if you're a fan of comics, graphic novels, sequential storytelling, or anything involving this great medium we love, you've no doubt read a bit of comics journalism in your time. I think that's safe to say, isn't it, really?
Mm. Yeah.
Like any one of us could read you a list of websites, magazines, etc., but you all know the ones you read, so I don't need to do that. Plus, I don't want to promote anyone. I don't have to, and they haven't paid me, so it doesn't matter. Whether it's news, reviews, previews, we've all checked out some story or series we're interested in finding out more about. Sometimes we get burned by it. Sometimes we actually get some information. Now, comics journalism is always shining a light on the sequential medium. Some of it good, some of it not so good, and some of it, let's be honest, is a load of self-important nonsense that calls itself journalism. And that's coming from someone who started a podcast so people would listen to my own brand of self-important nonsense. So I'm fully aware of how hypocritical I'm being here. But we thought this week we'd flip the spotlight around and actually shine it on comics journalism itself. I don't read that much about or see much about it. I don't know about you guys. Do you see much that talks about actual comic journalism? The focus of it?
No, only when it's bad, generally, I think. Yeah. Only when somebody's got taken umbrage against it do we really see it sort of highlighted, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know?
Do we see comic book journalism take on similar traits and trends to more mainstream ones?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Yeah. It's much shorter form now, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
So this week we're going to talk about the pros, the cons, etc. And as always, it's basically the opinions of four people ranting into microphones for a couple of hours. So don't take this as journalism. But, you know, it might be thought-provoking, entertaining, and, you know, as always, a little bit sexy.
Yeah, we'll have a go at this, won't they, somewhere along the line.
You can't please everyone.
Because journalists are usually well-informed and kind of quite intelligent people, whereas we're not.
Apart from guests, our guests obviously.
Yeah, apart from Gary,
clearly. Yeah, wonderful. Catching core, but okay.
So, to kick off this week's subject, I thought just a very broad, sweeping question, as I always do, and I always get told off about, but how important is comics journalism?
Ooh. Fucking hell.
Yeah. I personally write a lot about comics, and I wouldn't consider myself a journalist. I'll put it that way. Mm. You know, I think it's just opinion, isn't it? I mean,
when does an opinion become journalism? That's almost a different topic, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I don't really know what the definition is. But look, it's fairly simple, and it isn't rocket science. I say what I think, basically. And comics are a subjective medium, aren't they? One person will love something beyond words, and so the next person will hate it, you know. And we don't really have to agree. And I don't really give a flying fuck if people agree with me or not, to be fair.
Mm.
You know.
Which is clear from 80-odd episodes of...
Yeah.
But Gary, what, you know, you put out your own website and stuff. What do you think about, like, journalism in comics? I always do like the actual physical quotes with my hands, even though no one sees it.
Yeah, I'm doing it now.
Stop that, Tony, you'll go blind.
Yeah.
I think probably the journalism scene comes more into it from maybe the news of what's going to be made, like a film next, or what TV series is doing well, or stuff like that. That's where the journalism scene, it probably crosses over with your general journalism, as Tony said, when it comes to individual issues, weekly titles or something like that. Then it's such a broad type of opinions to come into effect. It's really hard to pinpoint exactly what makes that part of it journalism, I think.
Yeah. Is it journalism or is it just fandom? Do you know what I mean? I see it more as fandom, really.
I mean, you know? I've read many an article that talks about, for instance, like comic book resources or whatever. They always have the, here's a preview. Recently I saw the brilliant Batgirl, Chris Wildgoose pages. You know,
Yeah.
But that was a very much, here's a preview of an upcoming comic. And I checked out because I wanted to. That, would you say that's journalism? Whereas if there was a similar article that was giving, you know, this comic doesn't look very good, you know, it's not even out yet, but
critiquing it, yeah.
Is that less journalistic?
I'd say more so, because when you put a preview out, say on Comic Book Resources or something like that, Comic Book Resources especially, put it that way, it mostly comes from a press release, I think. Mm. So it's a regurgitation of certainly the images they send out. Say, look, let's promote this comic. Some text normally they send out that might be rewritten or might be reconsidered. But I would say if you're going to then go into it a bit and look at it and, you know, interpret and critique it, then I think that's probably a kind of journalism. I don't know.
Yeah, I think at that point you're crossing over into a little bit more of a journalism side, because there's a little bit more thought than any monkey can copy and paste a press release onto a website and publish it. It's when you, as you say, as you start to analyse that and probably analyse it from maybe a broader scale about where it fits in the market, what they expect to be achieving with that.
What would you do on your website, for instance, I'm sure you've gotten a press release or two in your time.
Most of the time, you probably quote from the press release about what they're saying about the title, but more often than not, I would probably tend to start digging into what the artist has done before, what other titles they've done, maybe start reading something like that, or you can pick up stuff online fairly quickly, so you can do research fairly quickly within a short space of time receiving that release. Just make it a little bit less formal, you know. All the press releases go out the exact same, and if you've got 100 websites copy and paste, and then every press release is going to be the exact same.
I got experience of that with when I put Vanguard Book One out like last year. Most of the websites I sent it to just were literally copy and paste what I put in the press release, and someone forewarned me it might be new to any, but that's what they do. And
It makes it easier for them, so they're more prone to do it, I think. So your publicity will spread wider, because people get a press release. You can cut and paste the, you know, what this book is about, which is generally how they open. You know, this book is about two men having a fight in a pub. You know, and they'll cut that out. And then, I kind of get that. If it's a plot summary, a very short one, you know, often they've got it encapsulated quite well because they've sort of honed it down. And then to go into what the book is about is something separate almost, you know? Yeah,
I think that's possibly part of the reason why when the Comics Anonymous page went to being just me, I think that's why I gravitated towards looking at the small press as kind of core things that I look at, because it was essentially you're producing previews and interviews and reviews and stuff that not a lot of people know. You know, I mean, next week there might be a Spider-Man out and 800 websites published that Spider-Man's coming out, and everybody will know a little bit more about that. The fortunate thing is most of my stuff, I've read a hell of a lot and reviewed a hell of a lot of small press stuff, so I can link back to other titles that
small press guys
have done. And that in itself just makes it a little bit different. It's perhaps pushing myself into a little bit more of a niche, but I think as a result of reading so much small press, I'm probably a better writer and probably a better reader of comics.
Okay.
Right, okay. Yeah.
I mean, I think probably because of the variety. Do you know what I mean? With small press. I mean, there's a lot of... Yeah, people are going to argue, but there's variety in the big two and Image and blah, blah, blah. And that's true. But I certainly, since starting this show, my mind has just opened up. Do you know what I mean? There's books I check out that I wouldn't have checked out before, and that's down to independent and small press books.
Yeah.
You know? Well, that is down to that saying of kind of like a small press creator can just produce a comic on whatever he or she wants, and there's no kind of creative process or editorial process they have to go through to get it out. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if it went out for a bigger company, it would have to go through a few people to make sure.
Yeah, I think it's also marketable. The fact, with a small press, I don't know if you agree with this, Gary, but if I say, for example, review a book from Avery Hill, okay, there might be 10 other sites that will review it at some point or other, but the access I have to the creator and to the publishers is much higher. Yeah. So I am able to communicate with them, and if I've got a query, or if I want to, rather than do just a review piece, I want to do an interview piece, it's a lot easier than it is even with 2000 AD, and certainly with Marvel and DC and Image. You know, you try and get an interview piece with, like you say, about the new issue of Amazing Spider-Man with Dan Slott, it just ain't going to happen, you know?
I think when it comes to those more mainstream titles, it's just your luck, really, whether you get the chance to speak to people. Whereas if you're approaching it as a fan and you're a fan of small press, then there's definitely such a quick kind of back and forth that's generated so easily.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, and they're people you often meet as well, certainly at conventions and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff like Twitter and social media, you have access, you kind of can get access to kind of the bigger creators, and some journalistic sites use that maybe a little bit nefariously.
Yes.
Bleeding Cool as one.
Yeah.
Go out and name them. Like, they would kind of publish something to get a comic creator's backup, and then they would write an article about how this Twitter thing went back and forth for them slinging shit at each other. I mean, I personally don't really class that as journalism, but...
No, I don't either. To be fair, Rich Johnson does make a point of saying he is not a comics journalist. I don't know... why he isn't. I don't understand his argument around it. I know he had a discussion with Jason Wood, who's a friend of mine from 11 o'clock comics, and they had a discussion, and you know, saying he pulled him up about something, and he says, well, I'm not a comics journalist, so I don't have that journalistic responsibility of balance, I think might have been the argument there. But of course you are. We've all got to give some form of balance to stuff.
But isn't that just sort of a get out of jail free card?
Yeah, I was about to say, isn't, of course, you know,
yeah.
When it gets to a certain point, you're clearly like a journalist. You know, if it's hard to, I'm trying to put.
Well, we did that at the front. We're hypocritical in a way. We did that. I did that at the top of the show. So we're not journalists.
Yeah,
and we're not. I can honestly say that. But I think Rich Johnson, Bleeding Cool, you're gonna have a bit of a harder time making that case.
He makes his living out of it, you know. So he makes certainly a living out of it.
Yeah.
Does that make you one? I don't know. Do you have to have a qualification to be a journalist or a cameraman, or do you know what I mean? A novelist? I don't think you do. Do you?
Do you think there's a lot of people out there calling them? And this is, I don't have any evidence to back this up or any names in mind. But do you think there's a lot of people out there who are calling themselves, for instance, comics journalists, who clearly aren't? Do you know what I mean? They're using that to get indoors, or using that to talk to people, especially like small press people as well, because they're. Their ears have to be open. You got to be aware of everything, haven't you? You know, to
I see it more. I don't know whether you get, Gary, and you very kindly gave me a ticket to a convention. So yeah, I think I know the answer to this. Do you ever get press passes to things?
Yeah, I do get press passes on occasion.
Yeah, I get the odd one, and I often think, for example, if I get a press pass to a convention and I do a write up of it. I know for a fact there's probably 10 other people who have had a press pass, and I often think, where are the write-ups for these other people?
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of people
that.
Yeah, exactly. Whether it be a good or a bad review, I find that you have to take responsibility of being given, you know, a £15 free pass or something to actually do a piece on it. You know, I see a lot of podcasters who get press passes.
Yeah,
especially in the American conventions. Yeah, and then you think, well, where's this piece they're going to write about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what? Because they mentioned on a podcast they went to a convention. And I think, well, that's, surely that isn't enough.
Yeah,
really?
Saying that, if they do an episode where they talk about it and they review it, you know, and stuff,
yeah,
that would count, though, you know, surely.
If they take it seriously and do a review about the convention and the, you know, what was there and what they saw and what they enjoyed and what they didn't enjoy, yes, I dig that. I think that's fair enough. But if they just do a report about how pissed they were in the bar afterwards, then I'm thinking that's not a press box, you know?
I mean, you did a fairly good rundown of the New York City Comic Con.
Yeah.
And you weren't
I didn't get a press pass, so, did I? Yeah.
It's also, you have to go that extra mile as well. If you've got a press pass, I think you have to talk to people you haven't talked to before. And this is coming from someone that is, you know, I don't like talking to anyone. But you know what I mean? Once you get through the door, especially since we started this show, it's discovering new things. And, you know, that people listen to this show and sometimes they like the sound of a creator and will check out their stuff. It means something. It does mean something.
It really does.
But didn't we get, like, there was some literature we got through from a con we were doing, or you might have mentioned it, Tony, that if you were a press and you had done a review and to ask for another pass, you had to link to the review you'd done last year to prove that you'd written something about it, otherwise you weren't getting another
invite. Yeah, that was invite. MCM. Yeah, MCM.
London Chapon do the same as well. They asked the three, three links of previous articles you've done.
Oh, really?
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it can be a bit tricky to kind of verify, because you can just say, yeah, I'm a comics journalist.
Yeah, MCM do one about the previous, if you've reported on it. They want to see three other reports in similar sort of subject matter, and they want a reference from who you work for, essentially. You know, they want to see the website address or something like that. I mean, for you, Gary, it would be yourself, so it's not too bad, but obviously I'll put John Freeman down, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
I think, especially with convention reviews, as we say, it's good to talk about them, but also when they're out there, for it to be as wide-ranging as it possibly can be. Do you know what I mean? Like different types of books, you know. If you've got pictures of cosplayers, that's fine, but rather than have it all be about cosplayers and then, oh, I picked up a book. Do you know what I mean? I like to read something that's got a bit of everything so I can see what the show had.
Yeah, definitely.
And that could make me want to get a table at that show next time.
Yeah, you know, and it can be like a diary, or it can be just very factual, or and there's all sorts of different ways to do it. This year in New York, you know, I did like a travel diary sort of thing. And I thought, well, that's just a bit different, you know, makes it a bit different. Sort
You're
of
like
thing.
Bridget Jones, really, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit of Big Knickers.
But when you talked about little anecdotes when you're like talking to Daniel Warren Johnson and stuff, that's really nice, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of bring the event to life, as it were, when you're talking about sitting in front of the art table and seeing these huge pages he's got on display and...
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now, that's a subject I was going to ask you about, and you, Gary, is we're a very sort of incestuous bunch of fans and creators these days, aren't we? The boundaries have really been broken down. People who are friends are now working for companies, you know, and we hang about with people. How do you feel, Gary, about writing a review of someone you know? Is it something you avoid, or is it something you do?
I think it's something I do, I would imagine, at least from my own perspective, I would imagine if you went back and saw maybe the first issue in a run, you would probably read it much the same as you would for a new book from the same person as well. I would certainly not try to make it biased, and it's the same when I get press passes for events as well. There's always going to be some sort of negative in there. You've got to bring the entire experience in that article, regardless what it is. I think most of the time you're building relationships, but it's far more like a working relationship than it would be maybe friends. I think for probably the most part. I mean, as you say, you meet maybe two or three times a year, which is probably in line with some people at work. But I would tend to try and gear it towards that way, particularly when I'm looking at their work or looking what they're doing. I may well socialise with them outside it, but when it comes to the journalism inverted commas side of things, then you would try and at least remain impartial. Otherwise, what would be the point in just blowing smoke up your friend's ass?
I think it also highlights Sorry, Danny. I think it also highlights the responsibility of a creator when you send these reviews out, or, you know, no matter how well you know someone, don't expect any review is a bonus, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I've heard from people out of the blue. Sometimes I've, you know, you don't hear from people for a while. I'm not a person who will just pressure just because I know someone. Oh, when's the review coming out? When's the review coming out? When's the review?
Oh God,
out?
No.
Some people do the hard sell on that though, don't they?
Oh yeah, mate. We'll get onto that in a second. I've got a couple of stories about that.
I don't think that's on, especially when it's free.
Yeah, I personally, in regards to that first subject there, I couldn't find myself reviewing your two books now. I don't think I should.
No.
Because, say, for example, which ain't going to happen, I didn't like them, then that would cause problems. And say, for example, you know, I really liked them, then people would call me out on it.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult line, that one. And then you've got to try and judge at what point. So, for example, I turned down two reviews this week. One was because I'm in it, so I've got a page of story in one of them, so... Oh, you can't possibly review a comic you're in. That's ridiculous. And two, the second one, because the guy I'm doing a project with at the moment, and I'm really fond of this guy, and he does some great work, but if I found something wrong with it, then that might cause a problem between him and I. To be fair, I don't think I would, but also, you know, I don't think I could, you know, the journalistic thing would be a problem. You know, you couldn't, you can't do that. You know,
that's only fair. Level. I mean, you know.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, that's just looking at it just really fair.
Well, kind of like as a journalist or a reviewer, essentially your what your stock is your reputation and what people can judge.
Yeah,
what you say to what is reality and how it mirrors their taste, surely.
So and I don't kind think, of. I've got to tell you guys, you two are now reviewers. I know as much as you like to think you're not, you are stating opinions about books and people are going out and buying them.
Yeah, I know. Kind of.
Which I think does make you a reviewer. You know, personally, I think you're in that category now, you know?
Does that... That doesn't make us journalists, though, does it? That just makes us reviewers.
No, it makes you... It makes you reviewers.
It
you
makes me hugely,
now.
Hugely important. Yeah. That's what you're saying, Tony.
It doesn't.
I have to look at the definition of a journalist. Curiosity.
We should look that up, really, shouldn't we?
That would show preparation. Everyone. And what is this show?
Go to Dan's Dictionary Corner.
Oh, it's not.
Oh, I've got another one for you, Alabama Hot Pocket. No, don't look that up.
Okay, give me a moment.
Yeah. Okay, then I will concede that you can call me a reviewer. You know, it's like you say. I haven't wanted to, to hold on to the term that. You know, I like the fact that people value my opinion, but
yeah.
But I haven't wanted to really sort of state that openly that I'm a reviewer. But you're absolutely right. Now that I think about it, you know, I should wear it like a badge.
I mean, we're getting to the point now where so many people have bought books off the back of what each of us have said. We should be getting a kickback, I think, sometime.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, you know, some conventions very kindly ask us to the event. So, and we're always grateful to that, even if we can't make it sometimes.
Yeah, we'll take a few quid off anyone, won't we?
Yeah, we will. Yeah, always man your tables. Don't leave your cash there because we'll just have it straight off.
The definition of journalism is quite vague, I think. It's the occupation of reporting, writing, editing, photographing or broadcasting news, or of conducting any news organisation as a business.
Oh, as a business, though, isn't it? That's the... Okay, that's interesting. So if you make income from your website, I don't know whether you do, Gary, or not, if you make income that allows you to pay for the hosting or something, does that make it a profession? I don't know. Do you get income? I don't know. Yeah.
I honestly thought you'd go read out the Alabama Hot Pocket.
Oh, God. I'll leave that for the outtakes, so listen in if you're interested.
Yeah. Stay tuned, folks. Stay tuned. That's all we've got to say.
Okay, right, next question for you then, Gary. How about this one? How do you feel about giving bad reviews? Do you give bad reviews?
I don't imagine that I give bad reviews. There's certainly reviews that have been...
Highly critical, put it that way then. Highly critical reviews.
There's certainly been ones that are far more middle of the road than others. And for good reason. I don't shy away from those middle of the road ones, but... If you've read something that is really dire... It's hard enough to read it, let alone write about it. So it's hard to get beyond that barrier of you're trying to promote things that you believe in, almost from just reading it. So if there's something that you don't necessarily like, you're just putting negativity out for no real gain.
Yeah, yeah, I get you. I mean, I used to be of the opinion that if you can't say anything nice, don't say it at all.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a little bit of a motto of ours on here, isn't it? And it still is, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you get to the point where somebody has badgered you so much in relation to reviewing their comic that you think, well, I'm stuck in the corner now a bit. I've got to review it. And you can't give anything that isn't an honest review.
That's a very diplomatic way of saying, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. But usually I don't review something either. There's, you know, we've all got time to review stuff. So if I don't review something because I don't like it. And if someone keeps writing to me and saying, you know, when's the review going up? Which I've had recently, more and more recently, actually. Someone wrote into the website and said, I keep sending you free copies of my comic. Can you be bothered to write a review at some point? And I thought, well, firstly, you know, don't be so
rude. You're on the strike list forever now.
You're not doing this full time. You're not getting paid for it. Do you know what I mean? You review comics because you love them.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what? With digital Dropboxes and stuff like that, I very rarely actually get a physical copy anymore as well.
Yeah.
You know? So you're
I
not.
I can understand that for small press guys, because, like, that's.
Yeah.
For a whack going out, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Hmm.
I think you.
Yeah, no, no. I'm not saying I want a copy. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying it doesn't relate to any kind of sort of payment if you're saying you're getting paid in books, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, how often do you get sent a book out, Gary? Do you get many through the post or?
Not very often. It's far more often PDFs or some sort of electronic copy of it. In fact, because there's so much of the stuff that I end up enjoying, I probably end up buying about 70-80% of it.
Me too. I'll double dip on stuff. Yeah.
The stuff's so good digitally, but I don't think anything really replaces hard copy.
Yeah.
To read something you know is good enough to write about, to then own it in hard copy and reread it, it's like you're discovering that again sometimes.
Yeah. I'm more likely to double dip in that sense with the small press and independents. And I read a lot of my mainstream books digitally. But certainly, like you say, if we get something sent through and I'm like, oh, I love this, you just have to have a physical copy. There's that collector's nature in you, isn't there? That you just have to have it.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, we're all hoarders, aren't we, essentially? Yeah.
Have you ever heard, like, you're giving out a review and someone sort of contested the content of it and sort of pulled you up over it?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Yeah, how did that play out?
Well, I reviewed a horror book a couple of years ago, and I said, look, I don't really understand the ending, and it didn't really make any sense. And and it was a pretty much a 50-50. It wasn't a bad review, it wasn't a good one, really. It was just a critical one.
Yeah.
And the guy wrote to me and said, look, this is the reason. And I said, okay. I said, to be honest with you, I didn't really see that it was clear in the comic. And it became one of those things where I just had to stop. I think I unfriended him on Facebook. Lines that started things like, listen, why don't you understand this? And I was thinking, and I was being perfectly polite to the guy, and I thought, one, he's from Glasgow, so he's probably going to kill me because they're all violent up there, aren't they? Yeah.
You're Mark.
But once he released the comic into the wild, and the readers should have all that they need to understand it, and if they don't, that's a failing.
Yeah. I think there is something to be said as well, is if you are known for giving, you know, good reviews, because the books that you review are good. I have had the thing where I've reviewed a couple of books from one person, and the second review of the book I've not liked it, and for a reason, you know, for a empirical reason, and the bloke's written to me, and I have said to them, you know, look, you can't say that I'm right when I like a comic, but I'm wrong when I don't like it, because it doesn't work that way, you know.
It's still the same person's opinion, so it shouldn't really matter.
I've had
people come back, as I say, those middle of the road ones, people are always coming back and asking why you're critical of this certain aspect, which they obviously love, but they have to see it. I suppose it's a struggle for some people to see it through without those rose-tinted glasses. So sometimes that's comes across as jarring or some sort of attack, and it's not
right.
necessarily.
I think some creators can be almost too close to their art, and sometimes you have to step away from it. Certainly when I put it the first issue of The Red Mask, I've said this a couple of times on the podcast, that there's a scene in there where there was a hell of a load of dialogue. You know, after all this like jumpy action, you know, you've got a lot of expositional dialogue, and rightfully so. You know, people picked up on it and said that the pace, you know, broke the pace up a bit. I knew where the story was going and how, you know, I don't regret that scene. But I took
I
took what I could from it, you know, moving forward. I wasn't going to say you people don't understand.
Everyone's stupid but me.
Yeah, that would be pointless.
Yeah.
You take it for what it is, and then you learn from it and make better comics next time on. I mean, that's going to be the progression, isn't it? Every time you're taking a kind of step forward.
And I think I can say it's, you know, those constructive criticisms have helped me moving forward. You know, I feel like the stuff I'm doing with Red Mask has a bit more pace, it has a bit more life in it because of that. I am wary about these things, and there's so much that you learn from issue to issue. You can't hold on to it too much. Do you know what I mean? Because your next piece of work always has to be better than the last piece of work. So this piece of work that's out for review at the moment isn't going to be your perfect book. The next one is. Does that make sense?
So it's always going to be the next one.
Yeah, it's always got to be the next one. You should be proud of it. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying don't be proud of it, but some people take it a little too personally.
To be fair, I think because I've been making comics now for sort of 20 years or so, on and off, I don't really care what people think. And I think you've got to retain that a little bit no matter who you are.
Yeah.
I know sometimes it hurts when you get a bad review, but it shouldn't affect you. Look at the sort of great artists and musicians of our times. You know, a lot of them have been completely misunderstood.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it should affect the way you do something so much. Yeah.
There was middle of last year, I sent the review on to you too, but the Comic House issue one was reviewed by a webcomic site that I'm not going to name.
Yeah.
And it was an absolute, just a hatchet job.
When they ripped it to shreds?
It was just like, it didn't even seem to be a review rather than... it was just like a kind of rant against general small press comics.
Yeah.
And it was just so ludicrous, I couldn't even take any part of it seriously. I didn't even consider it.
I can also tell you that I learned nothing about that comic from that review. I didn't know about what any of those stories were about. You know, I couldn't all it sounded like, oh, here's someone that hasn't liked this comic, I don't know what the comic's about, so I don't know what he's ranting about.
But
I
mean, the kind of the opinion being expressed was like, I'm kind of sick of reviewing these small press comics.
Anthology specifically, wasn't it?
Yeah. And
what a wanker.
It's weird. Every time I see that site pop up now, I've got no inclination whatsoever to go for it. Because if there's opinions like that being expressed on it, I don't really need to read those reviews.
It came off to me as the sort of grubby side of comics internet sort of behaviour, really. And we all know the grubby side of it. There is a grubby side of it, you know, and it's like done for clicks and that sort of thing.
Okay.
I mean, that kind of relish in sticking the boot in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, like, just say, you're going to write a review about a comic, but you don't like it. That's fair enough. That's everyone's prerogative. You know, we like stuff.
You've got to back it up. You've got to back up.
You are going to review it. How do you go about reviewing that in a responsible way?
I mean, we have a certain way of reviewing books, and occasionally I stray from it down the tubes, which is mostly give the plot and then give the review. And I can... John likes it that way. John's a little bit old school, God bless him. In regards to that, and I can see the sense in it, and sometimes I've stepped out of the box, sometimes John's allowed me and sometimes he hasn't, you know. And I think you have to state the facts about a comic. You have to say it's coloured and it's well coloured or it's badly coloured and it's so many pages long and it's priced at this, which is too much or too little or just about right, you know. And I think there are certain factual empirical ways to measure a review that you can do, and I think you have to do that. I think it's part of it. You have to say that. And then if you're going to say, I didn't like the art, you have to say why you don't like the art. And it's because, you know, the bodies were out of shape, or, you know, I couldn't tell different faces, or the action was poorly, you know, executed, you know. The dialogue didn't seem real. The dialogue was stilted. You know, there's a sort of thing. There are things that you can say that people can look at and they can judge for themselves, you know. I think going for the, you know, what the fuck have they done with this? Why have they done it? You know, and all this sort of type of attitude. I think is, you know, there's space for it. And I think, look, we've all got to show a bit of character in review. And a lot of the time, that's why people read stuff that you write. But you have to back it up with other stuff as well, you know?
Which brings in one of the polls we did this week. Yeah, one of the polls we asked, thank you to, as always, to everyone that voted. We said, when it comes to the comic reviews you check out, how do you prefer them to read? We have four options, as always. One, direct and honest. Two, blunt and to the point. Three, written with love. And four, going for the throat.
Someone pointed out the first two questions are essentially the same. Yes, that's that's my fault. I'll take that on the chin.
And were not the first time. and I will say that Gareth Hopkins, our mate Gareth Hopkins, he responded. He said, "I've gone for direct and honest, but would have liked a thoughtful and considered option," which I think is a fair shout.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
But you didn't have that option, Gareth. So stop whinging. So how do you think this one played out?
First one. What was the first one again?
Direct and honest.
Yeah.
Blunt and direct and honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the general consensus, isn't it? Direct and honest. And that was the one that was top of the list. With 61% people voted for direct and honest. 1% said blunt and to the point. I wonder who that
Okay, it's strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
38% said written with love. And no one said going for the throat.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's a space for joining the first one and the third, and going writing with love. I think if you really love something, you've got to show that you really enjoy it, and this is the reason. I think there's certainly space for that, you know. And I'm prone to a bit of hyperbole as well, you know. And
really?
I think that shows. Yeah. I think that shows a bit. I think people like that. You know, you say, I absolutely fucking love this comic. You know, this shows a lot just saying that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We don't kind of like just a clinical kind of cold look. I don't know, perhaps people do. It's not what I look for in a review, but...
Yeah,
it's an emotional content, isn't it?
Yeah.
That connects with you, it doesn't, and I think that's important to show as well.
And I think the going for the throat, I think that highlights... A lot of these, there's been a few instances recently where negative reviews have sort of swept the social media platform, haven't they, really?
Yeah. And I'd like to say that we were part and parcel of closing someone down on Twitter after we... after we put out who was he and we had a good idea it might be
who was he asked the question
truth or something wasn't it
he asked the question didn't
yes we're fighting the good fight people but
I'm not even sure if it was the good or the bad fight. I was just gonna
we're just out for a fight basically.
Like, what's going on?
A witch hunt for someone posting vaguely argumentative postings on Twitter, you know. to be fair, I actually found his stuff quite amusing.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I found it really amusing.
I was a bit sad when he went. I keep checking to see if he's come back up again. Did you see this one, Gary? I think
I saw some of the stuff he'd written.
He replied to us, in fact.
Yeah.
At one point.
Oh, he did, didn't he? Yeah, that's right.
With a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio. Who doesn't want that? I say. Who doesn't want that?
Baby-faced actor.
But certainly the going for the throat is never going to be a popular option. And I don't know whether we... Have we mentioned this, the podcast that talked about a certain book?
Yeah. About Merrick.
Yeah.
That's fucking garbage.
This was... I can't remember the name of the podcast. I haven't listened to it. But you guys have heard it, haven't you? A couple of reviewers. Is it the trade of Merrick the Elephant Man?
Yeah, I think one of their friends... Because they're obviously... quite tight, these two blokes, because the first 10 minutes of that, how they didn't spend any money because they never buy comics, and their friend had brought it back from England for them, I think.
Now what exactly happened? How does it play? Because I just want nothing to do with it.
I think basically they spend about half an hour, if not more, just saying that it's Luke Parker, isn't it, the artist, saying that Luke Parker is a poor Mignola. That's kind of the crux of their only critique of it, really. I think they say the writing's pretty okay, I think.
The really horrible comment, I'm going to say it, fuck it. Likened his artwork, like Parker's to Mignola's, like Creed to Pearl Jam. And it's just you're just being really, I don't know if that makes me as bad, like reciting it here, but it's just really horrible. Why are you saying that?
It just stank of a... it just stank to me of a review when no one had written any notes and they just sort of had a few beers and just larked about online. You know, there was no actual page by page analysis. There was no specifics. It was just sort of them having a go, really.
You can't level. I just really don't. I think that's completely unjust because I think Merrick's an excellent comic.
Yeah.
And I think those kind of criticisms are completely.
They missed the point of it. If that's all they're saying, they're missing the point of it. Mm. You know what I mean?
Did you get a chance to check out the actual show we're talking about, Gary?
No, I never heard that, no. Yeah. I read Merrick, though. Yeah. I don't know why MD would just attack it for the sake of it.
Yeah. But I'll also say this. They've probably had more listens to their show because of this.
I suppose that's the thing, isn't it?
I can't fucking remember the name of it for the life of me.
We don't want to give them any press. Yeah, we don't.
I think I noticed it because I saw Tom Ward and Gareth Hopkins again talking about it online. I think that's where I noticed it.
To be fair, it'd be pretty fucking horrible if you sort of just stumbled across it and then you found a podcast like that having a pop. It's horrible.
I suppose they must have just Googled themselves, or looked for publicity around the comic, and that's popped up. I don't know.
It's weird because, like, I've got a couple of weeks ago, we did the kind of attacking Image comics in the 90s.
And
I really don't think Rob Liefeld would be too bothered about me having a pop at Youngblood issue 6.
Well, let's face it, Dan, we talked about his comics a few days later. He gets an 8-figure deal for them. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to say we're instrumental in making that man millions. But we were.
You know that gif of Woody Harrelson from Zombieland? He's sort of like dabbing the tears. Rods and
fair play.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the grubby side of the internet, isn't it? It's just like, it's one step up from ex-hamster, let's face it, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
We've got a couple of responses from that poll, as always. Umar Ditta on Twitter. Said, too bad we don't see a lot of direct and honest reviews in small press. Dan Butcher responded to this, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got to apologise for this because I typed out two responses and it kind of, the first one went off into the kind of, fuck knows where that went. So the second one just popped up, which was a lot harsher than I intended it to be.
Right, okay.
What did I reply?
It's hard to take a dump on someone trying their best to create their own comic.
Yeah,
there's that to be said. That's definitely a valid point, isn't it? It really is.
I bet you were saying, like, you're kind of, the first tweet was like, you've got to be even-handed and like say what you see. But the second one was, but on the other hand, it's hard to take a shit on someone who's trying their best to make their own comic.
Yeah,
I have to say, going slightly on this subject, going slightly back to, as well, to what we said earlier about people badgering you for reviews. I did write one about a month ago. I sent it to you guys before I sent it out, I think, as well. And that was a fairly critical review, I'm going to say. And I gave reasons for it and everything. And I did say that this has been done before. You're not reinventing the wheel, you know, and all this sort of thing. And I have to say, after that one went live, which is probably for at least 6 months, my first sort of overtly and more critical than, you know, good review, I've been sent a lot less comics to review.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, used to be sort of two or three a week, and then John would send me stuff as well. But my little trickle slowed down, I've got to tell you. Yeah.
Interesting.
So I don't know. I thought it was an honest review. If anyone looks it up, it was of a book called The Artist. Have a look at it and just see what you think. I mean, I don't know what you guys thought. Did you think it was? What did you think? You read it, didn't you?
I thought it was totally on point.
Yeah. So
I guess, like, kind of, you, there's that thing, is it? If I write a bad review, will people stop sending their stuff in?
Yeah, there is. But
as long as you kind of keep the high ground of being fair and honest.
Have you ever done a bad review, Gary, and then met the person very shortly afterwards?
Yeah, I think I've done that a couple of times, directly when you meet them at cons. I suppose it's not necessarily awkward for me, I'm kind of having you, but probably more awkward for them, I guess. I suppose I can still stand by my opinion, regardless of whether it's good or bad.
You've
justified it in a kind of level-headed way, so what is there to be sorry for?
Exactly. Yeah, fair enough. I guess it can be a little bit awkward in a social situation.
Yeah, definitely.
So what didn't like about this then? You're like, yeah.
Just run for the bathroom. That's what I do.
Yeah.
Another couple of comments we had. Fraser Campbell at Fraser69C69 on Twitter. He says, as an indie creator, you're hoping for a signal boost, but honest, competent criticism has to be welcomed, which I think is fair enough. Also, we do hope for that signal boost, don't we? It's interesting when you get reviews back for the work you've done. There's that. Just before you click on the review, I get excited about it, seeing what someone else thought about my work. But there's always that element of, oh God, how's this? You know, how good is this one going to be? You know, how's it been with Vanguard, Dan? When you sent out your,
I've done that a couple of times where I've like got a review back, and I said, well, I'm going to read this when I get home, or read this when I've kind of, you know, not in the situation like this come through, and I'm walking home or something. So I need to sit down and read this and sort of take it in. And then most of the time it's been overwhelmingly positive, so it's cool. But yeah. I can imagine getting a bad one, it would be like, oh, okay. But like you say, it's one of those things, if you're sending out for reviews, that's what you've got to be ready to get. And having studied like art and design and stuff, and had open crits where you get people trying to rip the shit out of your work in front of you, you kind of get a bit hard-nosed about it. And but you still get that kind of the anticipation of the drop when you get a click on it and find out whether it's a good review or not. Or what's more interesting to me is when someone's read the book and got what you're trying to get and trying to do with it and understands that.
That's great when they almost see beyond what you're working on at that particular time. And then
we was fawning over Tony's review skills before we came on, and like there's so many times he's picked up stuff. Yeah. And kind of got to the real nub. You love that word, the nub of it.
Nub.
yeah. And that's kind of nice, because as a creator, you can kind of, right, I've done what I intended to do and what I set out to do. Yes. They understand it and they like it.
Yeah.
I suppose, is the flip side of hearing something maybe negative about an initial issue kind of lessened if you've released like a whole run of issues and then a reviewer can see the progression?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a definite positive.
I would say I'd seen a similar kind of improvement across Vanguard and across Red Mask.
But yeah, you find your feet and kind of like you kind of get on with it.
Because at first it must be like you're just dropping yourself in at the deep end, and then open for the day after that.
Yeah. It's interesting. The book I'm talking about reviewing later, that's very similar with that as well. The kind of, when you got the other five parts of it, it makes much more of it, because you're understanding what they're trying to do with the first one. And it's essentially why I prefer to buy trades and collections of small press stuff as opposed to one-off issues, even though I do that, because you get the full scope of what they're trying to do.
Yeah,
I think that's something. Sometimes that's difficult from a reviewer's perspective as well, if you're getting a single issue, to see the bigger picture, when you know the big picture is going to take another 2 years or something like that to get to the end. Then,
would you find it difficult if you got like an issue like three of five, and it's like, oh, can you review this? And it's like, well, they haven't included issues one and two.
Yeah,
how do you even approach doing something like that? It must be difficult.
Yeah, I've been asked that quite a few times before, and I've always been back and said that, why don't you just send me the whole run up till now, and I'll do it as a far more constructive piece.
Yeah, if you've already reviewed issues 1 and 2, for instance, you get an issue 3, does it benefit them whenever they send out issue 3 to send the first two as well anyway, just to be safe?
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Not everyone's going to keep the PDF, are they?
Yeah. No. I think that's an interesting issue from what you say there as well, Vince. I think if I've reviewed issue 1, don't think I'm going to definitely review issue 2, because a lot of what I'm going to say, it's going to be the same, you know, especially if it's the same art team as well. Mm. I don't think a lot of people think because you reviewed issue 1 well or badly or whatever, you're going to then review issue 2. I don't think people want to read it like that. I don't think people want to read, oh, issue 3 of this series is out, issue 4 is out, I'm going to review it again.
Mm.
You know, it serves no purpose. I think even get someone else to review it, if you're working in a little team of reviewers, sometimes is more important. You know?
I would agree, yeah. If you had, like, you sent it into Down the Tubes and you'd reviewed issue one, you'd get someone else ideally to review issue two, because you'd give it, they would have new insights on the book.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And there's only so much you can say about, you know, a 20-page comic sometimes. And a lot of that is, if it's a continuing story by the same writer with the same characters and the same artist, then it's difficult sometimes to come up with interesting points to bring out from it, you know?
Mm. I mean, last week with Planet of the Demons 2, that's a fantastic comic, and we gushed over the first issue, and the second issue is like a direct continuation.
And I repeat myself in that review. I said, you know, I spoke about the art and I compared it to a certain artist, and I don't mind because it is a great book, but I certainly repeated myself, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. What do you think, Gary? Will you just, if you've reviewed one, you'll review two, or how do you feel about it?
So, sometimes it will just really just depend how many reviews I've got to get through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree.
I guess
that's a big point as well.
What makes Anonymous is a little bit different because it's just me, I guess. There are books that are so good in issue one that you want to see if that continues into two and three. If it does, then you can see the point of just reporting that back as well. If it dips, then you're risking, I suppose, that the person may well kick off because you've already given them a good review in the first one. But again, that comes down to, that's your opinion of the progress of the book. I mean, a book can get better and it can get worse. That's
true. Mm.
So have you guys ever come under editorial pressure when an editor has said to you, right, we want this book, you got to give it a good review, and maybe you don't feel that way?
No, I've never
been in a situation like that.
I've never felt pressure to say something. John occasionally does change stuff that he thinks I've put in a, you know, should be put in a different way, and we occasionally butt heads over that. But I think I've never been under pressure to give a
parental warning before a review of my book Stalkerville.
Yeah, you broke the mold for that one, my friend. Yeah,
I'm so proud of that.
We're a kid-friendly site until you came along. And me, to be fair. Yeah, let's not. Yeah.
So on the flip side of that, Gary, have you done kind of been the editor, or in future you'd want to take additional reviewers and writers on under your site? I don't really know much about the editorial process of how you manage the journalists or the writers under you, but presumably, like you just made reference there, Tony, to John, you've got to kind of keep him on the leash or keep him on the straight and narrow, as it were.
Yeah.
Or introduce our style. I don't know.
It's his site. It's his site, so he gets the final say. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
You know, and he is the editor, and you've got to agree, you know, to be looked at by an editor and examined, and stuff can be changed, because he's allowed to do that because he's the editor, you know. If you don't agree with it, then say it and John will listen to me.
Most of the time I would imagine John's feedback is constructive as well. It's not necessarily you're not doing that because you're a dick or because
John's an old school editor, you know.
I
think as long as you understand you're changing it for the better, and you can't have any really kind of issue with that, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, here's an example, then, a recent one. As you know, I talked about that the rape book last week, and I made a point during the review of saying that I think that the book is written under a pen name. It kind of wasn't, and I didn't go fishing about for the name of the creator to find any links. You know, I thought it's my responsibility not to in that case, because you deserve a certain level of anonymity in relation to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
John. Because he is a journalist, you know, he does have a background in journalism, looked about on the internet and found the name, and as a writer showed it as the reference, you know. And the creator wrote to me and said, could we remove it, because I'd rather be writing, I don't want to link to this identity, you know. So we took it down straight away, and that's an interesting point. You know, there's things like that you've got to think about.
I would presume if someone puts their name on a book, Joe Bloggs, right, that's what we're going to refer to them as. And presumably that you wouldn't want their, if they've written under a pen name, why would they want their real name unless they mention it? Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah.
You would say,
I'm about to start writing something, and I'm meeting with the editor in a couple of weeks, and we're having a discussion now as to whether I write it as myself or I write it as a in character, put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, as a character. And that should be quite interesting. It's an interesting prospect, that, as well, you know?
What are you going to call your character name, Tony? Like Stanky John or something like that?
I'm thinking about maybe Vince Vanguard. I think that's quite a good
Peter Tits.
Peter Tits.
Oh, that name has to appear in a artists out there. What does Peter Tits look like?
There is, I don't know if you're aware of this, there is some heat growing over the 10 best shits post I made today. That is the height of journalism. Yeah, I've said to you before, I just got a bit sick of people writing about the 10 best albums and all that sort of shit, and I'm bollocks. I'm going to write 10 best shits. And there is a little bit of heat about that being turned into maybe a comic strip and then maybe a movie. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I have repeated the story about eating a lot of beetroot and then thought that I was bleeding from the inside. Lovely. I think that would be a big part of it. Maybe the final
act. Yeah. It has a bit of a scare in it.
The thing is, if it's going to be turned into a film, you've got 10, so that's a franchise you're looking at, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a saga.
Viking
shit saga.
Better fucking watch out. Is something I wanted to ask you, Gary, especially, and you two guys as well, is I put something out on Twitter recently to say that I was tired of people thinking that my job was to promote their book. I got a couple of replies from people saying, well, of course it's your job. You know, I would think as a reviewer, you are promoting comics. And my reply was, I'm not here to promote your book. You know, I'm here to talk about books and review them, but I'm not here. I'm not your slave, essentially. We had a little period, certainly on this show, and I get it all the time, of people thinking that, you know, because we've reviewed one book, that we should be reviewing all their books and we should be promoting their product constantly. That one, we might not like it, and two, there's an awful lot of stuff out there. We can't be have a responsibility for everyone.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit of a presumptuous to make, presume that you're there for promotional. I mean, they may have sent it out for promotional reasons, but you kind of reviewing it is entirely its own beast, as it were.
Yeah.
I can understand if it's preview material or press releases that are sending out as promotion, fair dues, but if it's for a review, it's a critical analysis of it. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not just free advertising.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think because occasionally, you and I, probably Gary, both of us, are sometimes, let's say, soft touches, you know? We'll get an email saying, oh, this is coming out next week. You couldn't get a review out fairly quickly, could you? Would you mind? And I'll do it. Do you know what I mean?
I think this highlights one of the comments we had from our poll, which I think that's a good point, because obviously when you give reviews to books, some people will think they're the go-to to give me to say something nice about my book.
Yeah.
And JP Jordan, at JP_Jordan on Twitter, he voted for honest and constructive, but he said, no one ever died from a constructive critical review. No one ever learned from a 100% positive one, especially in the small press. Being nice just to be nice in a review just cements bad habits in beginner creators.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, and I've given really good reviews, and I've given recently some fucking terrible ones as well. I think you just got to be honest about it, haven't you? You know?
Yeah. But do you think that's because some people have picked up that bad habit of, like, that's a go-to person for
a good
review?
Yeah, definitely. I get that. And I've actually lost friends by giving a bad or a critical review. I'll be honest with you. There's people who've sort of, not friends, there's people who've been, like, social media, you know, chat at conventions type people who suddenly decide that, you know,
This is the way with, I haven't read video game magazines in about 10 years, but there used to be video game magazines you'd read a review of and you'd instantly discount it, saying, well, they're so flaky, they might be getting backhanders. And then, like, they had the Edge magazine and they'd do their scores at 1 out of 10. And if a game was getting a 9, that's a fucking shit hot game.
Yeah.
They'd rarely give 10s, but they were so kind of like consistent and kind of high journalistic kind of skills in comparing to the back catalogue of what they reviewed. When they give something a good review,
yeah, it's the reputation. They built up a reputation.
Yeah, their reputation. So, like I said, kind of being journalist, and you're living by your word. If you start doing those kind of reviews and then people pick the comic up and say, well, actually, it's not really good, but Tony said it was fantastic. That kind of credibility is gone. And next time you say, oh, this is fantastic, and it is, people were reluctant to believe it.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm certainly thankful, if we've ever talked about a book on this show and people have picked it up and liked it, as a lot of people do, they get in touch with us and say, oh, I really like this book. That's amazing. I don't, not because I think it's good PR for the, I mean, it is great that people are picking up these books, but also I feel like someone else is in my club because I genuinely love the books that I talk about. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, great, here's someone else I can talk to this book about because I like it.
Yeah, and if there's something that's really good, I'm really chuffed that you spread the word a bit and other people enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know. And there's the financial aspect. You know, people are making a bit of money so they can make another book. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's something to do with comic book collecting in general. You're just pleased that someone likes something that you like.
Mm.
Yeah. We're all desperate for friends, Gary. I think that's
Well, it's a good time to bring the ego into it then with our next poll.
Oh.
Because in this internet world we live in, the ego is almost multiplied, isn't it? Certainly when you talk about something, everything's very self-centered in a way. We have a weekly show where we talk for 2 hours and people listen to us usually on a Monday, you know, so I'm fully aware of how hypocritical anything I would say would be. But certainly who the reviewer is can mean something to people as well. So with this next poll, we asked how much do you rely on or trust a comic review, and we have four options: very much so, sometimes they sway me, depends on the reviewer, and not at all. This one,
right?
So who, which do you think that our listeners voted for? When it comes to trusting comic reviews or relying on them,
probably gravitate to someone who's got roughly the same opinion as you, so it would probably depend on the reviewer.
Mm.
Yeah, that's true. I think when you look at it, do you really trust Bleeding Cool? I certainly don't.
No.
You know, but you know, do I trust probably John Freeman? Then I probably do. Yeah.
And what do you think, Dan? Would you agree?
I think that's a fair shake of it, yeah.
Do you think people read the reviews and they build up, even if they don't know the reviewer, they build up a certain, they keep coming back to this person because they like, you know, they've liked the books that these people have recommended, for instance?
But I definitely think it can sway. Like, you might be sort of undecided on a particular comic or trade.
It all depends on how, I guess, the swaying, for me personally, it would be if something's super positive or super negative. Do you know what I mean? An in-between review isn't going to sway anyone, is it?
I think. No, you're right. If kind of the worst sin isn't it being like middle of the road and completely unremarkable.
Yeah.
There's the very basic bit as well, is if it's a book about, I don't know, crime noir that involves magic and you think, oh, that sounds interesting, then if that's a subject you choose, you know, or if you mention in the review the art style is like this person or like that person, that might sway you, mightn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
I certainly, when I read into a review, sometimes what the reviewer will say will sway me. A lot of the time it's to, why are you talking about this then? If they start off, you know, I don't like graphic novels that much, I don't read them, you know. Yeah. If it starts off a review like that, automatically I'm on the back foot thinking,
let me just cross this review out, hang on.
But it depends on the reviewer was the top choice with 64% of the vote.
That's quite high, yeah.
Yeah. In second place, with 19%, not at all. So there's some people out there who just, they don't give a, they don't care about reviews.
Yeah, they're the avocado people, aren't they? Yeah. We talked about them before.
12% said sometimes they sway me, and 5% said they very much rely on and trust a comic review. Right, so I'll read out a couple of the opinions, because these polls are always interesting because we always get a raft of opinions. You know, they start.
Everyone's got a fucking opinion, apparently. <aren't they? laughs>
Ken Reynolds actually said, he said opinions are like arseholes and all that.
Yeah. In the, well, I know Ken very well. There you go.
In the comments.
Yeah, so he knows I'm an arsehole.
Now, Stevie Robinson at Johnny Utah 66, he said, I've recently just stopped reviewing small press comics due to complaints about and subtweets about soft reviews.
Okay.
What does that mean? What's a soft review?
So he's not really, if it's bad, he's not really saying it, I suppose. He's just being polite, I suppose. Is that right?
I think so. Dan, what would you consider to be a soft review?
What would I think of one?
Well, what do you consider to be a soft review?
Well, just the copy and pasting of a press release, just and saying, oh, and this date, it will be out on this date, with nothing else in it. I consider that a soft review. It's not really doing anything.
The hard or the soft option. Yeah.
I consider it soft if it's just not even kind of offering up an opinion. It's giving you facts about it's a 128-page book. It's going to be out in October. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I took it to mean sort of you get a comic and bits aren't very good and you sort of go, it's all right, I quite liked it, you know. You don't really sort of bring up the bits you didn't like, I suppose.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, okay.
I consider the softer, like, just mention the fact that you're ducking any kind of possibility.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
Almost non-committal either way.
Exactly, yeah. So they can't have you because you covered the basics.
Yeah.
It's what we do on this show.
okay.
Oh, well, no, it's just very basic. Simon at Boeing, Simon Russell, he says there's a work of difference between a critique, a review, and a synopsis. They are less interesting to me in that order.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
Lucas Kowalczyk, he said, depends on the reviewer. Too many creators also want to be journalists.
I think that's can you be both, I suppose. Is that something?
Yeah, I think that's. You know, when some people say that a music reviewer is just a failed musician. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of mentality, isn't it? Andy CT, at Super Andy T83, says, I get a lot of recommendations from friends. With indie comics, a good pitch from the creator usually gets me on board. So it's not... I don't know. So it's not so much the reviews, it's just, I guess, a recommendation from people you know, isn't it? That works for a lot of people, though, doesn't it?
I think so. That works in all forms of the world, doesn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sam Webster at SJ Webster Art, he said, comes down to similar tastes and wavelength for me. Someone who always gives me a good steer. That's one way to put it. that's quite a choice of words. but I guess, like certain reviewer, you know, the genre you like, isn't it? You're going to check out a review of a book that's in your genre. I would guess. So that's how you would get to know certain reviewers, I would have thought. I mean, think about you, Tony. Like, when you review such a widespread sort of...
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, I do get... I think a lot... Because I just get sent stuff.
Yeah.
You know, generally, I do pick up stuff and then review it. But I think there's a... I don't know if you feel this way, Gary. There's kind of a race these days. I get a bit sick of it. There's a race to get the first review out sometimes. You know, and I've been guilty of, you know... joining in that race occasionally, but it does get me, you know, I think, oh god, I've got this first book, I'm the first person to get this book and they've sent four preview copies out, I want to get the first review out. I think there's a bit of that goes on these days as well, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I think it takes a lot of the enjoyment out of it as well.
It does. I think you're
right. It's a shame if you're forced to kind of do it faster than you'd be comfortable with, because you want to be the first one.
Again, I think in most of the cases I felt that the email has always been promotional, promote this heavy, I think. Where they're desperately trying to push it out.
But and I guess that echoes in popular news now, where it's kind of like trying to get the story first and then get the facts later.
Yeah.
It's a bit different, obviously, with comics, but...
Comics suffer a lot, certainly from... clickbait journalism as well.
I would say, you know, when comics come out, it used to be back when a comic would be released and then everyone would review it, but like it's almost a race, especially on a Wednesday, for people to get a review out, you know.
I mean, what's...
But then
I think that was probably part of the interest for me to move away from mainstream stuff, because I knew there was that promotional pressure on them. Small press, you're still trying to get word out there, but it's just a lot more in tune with the type of reading I want to do. I want to read it until I know what's happening, I know what's coming next, and that I enjoy it. And then that's where it'll progress onto a review, instead of someone holding a gun to your head saying review it.
Yeah.
Yes, totally understand that.
I mean, I also find that with certainly comic book websites as well, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because some of the larger websites who like will do like good reviews about some of these big two books, they're always, you know, people sort of say, oh, they're just being paid by the big companies. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know if they ever are they?
No,
I don't know.
I can't imagine. I certainly haven't seen an article about it. You know, we're going to get a reply now with an article, aren't we?
There's all that messy business with video game journalism where people were taking backenders to inflate reviews. Not as big as money involved in comics, really.
Mm. Isn't Bleeding Cool owned by Avatar, though? Don't they own it?
I don't know, actually.
I don't know.
I think so. I think that's right, yeah.
I know, but I mean, there's a lot of certainly banners and sort of preview articles that I've seen for Avatar books.
I mean, I say we're Bleeding Cool. There was one last year with Dan Slott, a Spider-Man book, and they get hold of a pre-release copy where there'd been quite a strict sales embargo, and they think just basically reviewed the book and then gave away the twist at the end. And obviously, the creator was fucking well pissed.
Yeah, they have a bit of a hate relationship, don't they?
Yeah.
Him and Rich Johnson, I think.
But that would be annoying if kind of everyone's waiting for the kind of what's going to happen with this story, and then you come up online and saying, oh, this is what happens to Spider-Man. Mm. And
yeah, oh, God, yeah.
You're doing it for purely selfish reasons because
I'd like to think that the ones I use. Yeah, I like to think that the websites I go to, and I don't go to Bleeding Cool, and I don't click on it ever. But I like to think there's a lot of the websites I go to are sort of sensitive to that sort of thing
and
won't put it in the headline, you know?
Yeah.
Usually I go to a Bleeding Cool when like I follow a couple of creators and then they mention an article in bad terms. And then I click on it and I go, oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I used to check it out. I think everyone's had some sort of, not interaction, but, you know, experience with Bleeding Cool, reading it and stuff. I certainly used to read it occasionally when I sort of first discovered it, but now the only time I'll ever see an article usually is a Twitter link. Do you know what I mean? And normally, and well, it's like this with a lot of Twitter links actually, that you check out and you just think, what did I do that for? Why did I read that article?
Yeah. I mean, see the black and white heading and you're like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. And this isn't necessarily Bleeding Cool or any specific website that we're talking about, but and no one will ever know this, but we have a little WhatsApp group, the three of us on this show, and we're always sending back to each other, what on earth is this person talking about? What on earth is this?
Yeah.
And you know, it could be an article, it could be a review, it could be like just someone, a press release of something. That there's a lot out there will just absolutely boggle your mind. We'll have to put a thread on
tweet sometimes, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. We'll have to put a thread on the Awesome Comics Talk to see if there's any absolutely astonishing headlines around.
What's been the biggest spoiler? Well, that'd be difficult, wouldn't it?
Oh, no spoilers. Nothing angers me more than a spoiler. There's a lot that angers me more.
State of the economy, Brexit. Yeah, there's a lot that angers you, isn't there? Yeah, the price of something you just bought in the supermarket.
Someone putting cucumber in my sandwich and they haven't written on the box. That's just...
Yeah, when the price of crisps goes up.
Yeah.
Real fears.
Right, interesting. Have we got any other replies or...
Sarah Harris, sorry. She said that she likes to read reviews after she's read the comic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to see what the opinions were like against hers, which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah, fair enough.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever read a comic and then read a review afterwards like that?
Yeah, I have. It's a bit the same. It's compared to movies for me. Is I won't watch a making of before I've seen the movie.
Yeah.
It's a similar sort of thing, I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes for me.
Yeah.
When I read an interview with the creator until I've read the comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've done it with books, comics, films, loads of stuff. It's good when they pick up on something you didn't. You go, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Do you think spoilers are more prevalent with mainstream books than in the small press?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I would say, with movies, for instance, I'm more likely to read a review about an independent film. Like, I'm a big independent horror fan, and I'm always reading reviews about these new films that I'm slightly interested in, and I have less fear about reading a spoiler for something like that than I would be for a big budget, like, you know, like Doctor Strange, which I went to see. I ignored the internet, do you know what I mean, for a few days, because I didn't want anything to spoil it. That's the same for comics as well. I can't think of too many small press reviews that I've read that have completely spoiled something.
How do you approach that, Gary? Is it something you avoid? I mean, even in the little summary that I give at the start of review, I'll sometimes say things like, and that's where it all started, ... or something like that. You know, is that something you do, or?
I try to keep that mystery a bit there as well. I mean, most of the time, that's one of the main parts that you enjoy in the whole book.
Yeah.
So why go ahead and rob somebody of seeing that same thing or discovering that same thing?
Yeah. That's exactly how I feel about it. Like, you feel like you're taking something from someone. You're taking an experience and fun and enjoyment away from someone by robbing them of that.
Why would someone give a summary of the whole book?
Yeah.
You know, you get that occasionally as well, don't you?
Yeah.
You know.
I've seen their review on Amazon that fucking did that. Just like a plot by plot, a point by point thing of the whole plot.
Yeah.
The entire book. You know, okay, don't need to read this now. You've literally gone over everything.
Although that might have made you want to watch it more.
Such a pedestrian sort of listing of what happened, like a kind of, this happens, right, then this happens. Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah.
They're interested in that.
I'm quite pleased so far with a lot of the reviews that I've had. You know, no matter how positive they are, but my comics, I always put a cliffhanger at the end. And I'm quite pleased that no one's spoiled anything. You know, even when people have talked about them, they've said that they've liked, you know, as always, this book ends with a good cliffhanger. And I like that, because I like that people will talk about that without spoiling it, because then people know, oh, you know, something, that's an event, that's something interesting that people have to check out.
Yeah.
I think, like, so Gary does it, like, you're doing small press for the kind of the love of it and because you like it so much, so you've got a respect for the kind of material you're reviewing, whereas people who do that for big cinema films and big releases, some of them, you know, don't give a shit and just want the site hits.
It's back to that. Who gets that information out there first? It's back to that kind of
exactly.
Bastards that are out there.
Yeah. Well, it's been quite a topic, you know, comics journalism. Yeah. I think we've covered a lot of bases, really. I just, as always, we've gone in all kinds of directions, haven't we?
Yeah. Had a little moan.
Yeah. Showed a little love.
What would the show be without a fucking moan?
Yes.
I keep coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, all you comic reviewers and comic websites out there, keep up the good work, you know, because like I say, we're not, even though we've talked about some negative things here, I've certainly checked out a lot of books based on articles and reviews and everything and met some lovely people. And also, I like reading interviews with a lot of small press creators, especially the ones like we've been fortunate enough to talk to. So interviews with small press are always good. They're always quite interesting. See how people come across in type rather than face to face. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You can get quite a lot out of them as well. You know, I think people are prepared to give it a bit of time.
Yeah.
I've just done one with Gareth, actually, Gareth Hopkins, and, you know, really interesting answers, you know, really good stuff.
Yeah. Certainly a typed interview. I will really sort of think about that. Do you know what I mean? I overthink it, probably. Especially with, like, when you get like a top five question, you know, someone gives you a list of questions. If I've got time to think about it, then sometimes I think I overthink it, you know, because you want to come across just right without, you know. And also I ramble. Anyone who's listening to this show knows I ramble. What do you mean,
I'm sure we're all aware. Yeah. What? Talk about our backsides.
Yeah. It's all nonsense, but we love it.
Literally.
So keep up the good work, folks. Let us know what you thought about this topic, or if there's anything, you know, you want to bring up. We might have missed something. But I think we're on to the next. I think that's it for this week. I think we're done with comics journalism, haven't we?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
So
don't want to get too much into shit slinging.
Yeah. You're like a monkey, aren't you, Dan? You just throw
Alabama over. Hot Pocket definition coming up in the show. Stay tuned.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. That's what we're here for.
That is what we're here for.
Butcher's Dictionary Corner. We look forward to that. But does anyone have any shout outs this week?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Future Shock, 40 years of 2000 AD. There's an exhibition going to run soon at the Cartoon Museum, which is 35 Little Russell Street, nearest to Russell Square or Tottenham Court Road. And it's running between the 25th of January to the 23rd of April. And it features original artwork by Brian Bolland, Carlos Esquerra, Dave Gibbons, Kevin O'Neill, many, many more. It's £7 to get in. If you concession, you get £5 for students and £3 for under 18s. It's open Tuesday to Sunday, 10:30 to 5:30. And don't forget, it's closed Mondays. That's cartoonmuseum.org. That's very good. Simon Russell sent me that, actually. Good lad. Have any of you been to the Cartoon Museum before?
Yeah.
No.
No. Gary?
No, I haven't been before.
Yeah, it's good, actually. It's only a little space. It's only a little space, but they do some good stuff there. And the other shout I want to give is to Slice Quarterly, number 5. And I'm only really giving it a shout because I'm in it. That's a lie. It's 37 pages, some black and white, some colour, edited and marshalled by the mighty Ken Reynolds, past guest, good lad. It's really building momentum now, Slice Quarterly. It's really, really growing for me. There's some just great stuff in it. There's a strip called Childhood Without Cranks, and we all know how much we love Cranks on this show.
The Jason Statham films?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah, Strange Visitor, written by John Osborne, art by Sam Bentley, letters by Ken, David Lucy. There's some great stuff. Head over to Facebook, go at Sliced Quarterly on Twitter, facebook.com / Sliced / Quarterly on Facebook. And if you have any work or any inquiries, please email Ken at editor@slicedquarterly.co.uk. Really interesting stuff. I've basically rewritten a page of Gareth's Hopkins work, as I think four of us have, but David Thomas, David Wilcox, and JP Power and me have all done a sort of rewrite of a page, a sort of interpretation of a wordless page of Gareth's. And if you go over to Down the Tube this week, I did quite a lengthy interview with Gareth, which is much better answers than questions, and it's very interesting, and some really good examples of his artwork over there as well. Nice. So have a look at it.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely. That's my two, dude.
Yeah. I just want to give a shout out to Susie Gander. Is that?
Legend.
The creator of the Periwinkle comic. Purely because she was talking on Facebook about how she picked up a set of those Bodychan DX action sort of poseable figures, you know, that artists use for reference. Have you seen
those? Yes. Yeah.
And it purely inspired me to go ahead and order myself like a pack. And they arrived this weekend, and they look awesome. So awesome. It's been something that's been on the wish list for a little while. But you know, she inspired me to just go ahead and get them. So I did. So that's awesome. So hopefully that will help me with my artwork going forward.
I ordered a couple of them off a snidey Chinese seller, so mine won't be turning up till February. So review the quality of them when they come in.
Yeah, it is the official knockoffs. They're knockoffs.
I'm 99% sure they're knockoffs.
I mean, they're great little figures because they're like fully poseable. You know, there's no detail on them or anything, but it comes with, you know, there's a samurai sword, there's a laptop, there's a handgun, there's a mobile phone, different sort of poseable hands.
So what do you do? Like, put it in a pose, take a shot of it on the camera, and then draw from there.
And then you've got your photo reference, so you can literally frame your character however you want. And it's
interesting.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. So hopefully, you know, I've got a character that I've got to draw with a samurai sword, so that's going to come in handy. So hopefully, I've never drawn from like a figure reference like that before though. So it's going to be an interesting sort of little experiment. But you know, I highly recommend them. I mean, they do cost a little bit, you know. They're not cheap. I mean, I didn't spend too much. I think I got a male and a female sort of body chan sort of figure, and they're probably about, well, actually they're probably the size of an average action figure these days. What's that? 4 inches? 3 or 4 inches?
I don't know.
Yeah, and for both of those, I can say it was £45.
That sounds bad.
And the postage was free. And this is on eBay, you know. So I'm not trying to shill any particular website. It was literally on eBay, because I'm a pikey. So but they are cool. So, you know, I'll let you know how I'm getting on with them. But they're very cool indeed.
Yeah, when Marvin turns up, I'm going to give him a good road
I'm
test.
Sure you'll get a lot out of them, Dan. So,
well, if they work, they might turn up and be absolute pieces of crap.
Is it the same sort of set where you get like different sort of appendages?
No, on this one, I think they're just set like the figure. You don't get any extra bits and bobs. So, the cheaper price I'm paying, I'm getting a lot less for my buck. Oh. But we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Indeed.
So it goes. Yeah. Getting the cheap option. I've got a shout out for a comic I've done some work on for El Marvo. Mexican wrestler set in the post-apocalypse. It's really been a fun project, written by Ben Arrington and Luke Condor, and you can download the 5-page preview at hawkandcleaver.com/L-Marvo-preview. We'll put that in the show notes in case.
Your work's stellar on that as well, dude. You
know, yeah, it's great, dude. Yeah, some lovely angles and stuff you've been using on that. Yeah,
trying to kind of up that game a bit, and always trying to kind of push it a bit. But yeah, check it out. It's good.
You always push it, don't you, Dan?
Yeah, push it some more.
I should put the salt and pepper music in right now. And
well, hopefully, we might be kicking off a Kickstarter in February. We've got to do some discussions about that before we kind of roll ahead, but that's what seems to be happening. So yeah, keep your eye, keep in build.
Very interesting. So there you go, Gary. Do you have any shout outs?
Yeah, I've got a couple of shout outs actually. A discovery through the week on Kickstarter was for Volume 2 of Grinadon. It's like a kind of Game of Thrones meets 300 type book with writer J. Miles Dunn and Erwin Arosa on art. The artwork is just stunning on it. If you just look at the couple of pages that you can see on the Kickstarter itself, it's just stunning. Looks like a really promising book that I've backed just for the two digital copies. It's US based, so postage is just a bit of a killer for that, but it looks really, really good. The other one is Vietnam Zombie Holocaust. Don't know if any of you have heard of this.
It sounds like Tony should have.
I was there.
It's a cracking book by a kind of Scotland-based writer, George Lennox, that by James Devlin. They released that through Cult Empire Comics. It's a comic store really that George has then moved on to writing his own comics as well, but Vietnam Zombie Holocaust, we've got issues 1-3 already out, with the fourth larger issue, we're going to be 40 pages coming out at the start of this year as well.
Oh, nice one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know where you are with a Zombie Holocaust, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a great book.
It's like the Southern Railways.
Oh, God.
Don't start him off, Tony.
Don't.
Oh, dear.
I have to be that guy. Yeah. On Twitter, sorry.
No,
I don't believe you, mate.
Yeah, fight the good fight, Dan. Now, recommendations. What do we have for this week, gents?
Shall I lead off?
You shall indeed.
Could. I've got the book that I've been raving about. I can finally talk about now. It's the book that I hinted at a few months ago as the one I got to see an early preview copy, and it's something I think you bought as well, Vince, haven't you? You bought one this week.
Yes. Yeah, I did. That's what I'm going to say.
It's
got it.
Read 'em
for a steal.
And Weep, book one. Yeah, you did. You got it for 99p, and you threatened if it's no good, you're going to kill me.
I didn't say that. But I will.
It was implied.
Read 'em and Weep, book one, Serial Killer. It's a novel written by Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill. It's published by Millsverse Books. It's 296 pages. Here's the story. The 1970s is a dangerous time for kids, an even more dangerous time for adults who do them wrong. Meet comic book editor Dave Maudlin, the world's laziest and most cowardly serial killer. Actually, he's never killed anyone himself yet. In the preview on it at Amazon, he gives this bit away. Dave's been putting lethal information into his stories, hoping that they'll result in an early demise for his readers. So that's kind of how he's a serial killer, which if you don't think about the history of comics, you know, it is a little, there's a little bit of the Action Comics reflected in that, I think, maybe.
Definitely.
I've written a review. It's going to hopefully be going up on Down the Tubes this week. Here's a few quotes, line quotes from it. "You're a lazy serial killer." Somebody says that to someone. "You can't have a story about a black footballer's son." That's one of the old school says to one of the new writers. During a sort of slightly uncomfortable sexual encounter, someone shouts, "Punctuate me." So that's quite cool. "You are more vegetable than boy." I like that quote. That's going on the bottom of all my emails now. "Peddling filth to our nation's children." "Girls love wolves." That's a good one, isn't it? And at one point, and I have it on good authority, that Kevin O'Neill suggested the use of the word clout, which I think is, if anyone knows, if anyone's from London, they'll know what that means. And it's not punching someone. It's just a book that just, it's carried along by its dialogue. I know the history of it is, at one point it was going to be a TV series. And I think it almost made it. And then I think it was then going to be a radio show. And finally, it's come out as a novel. And you can see where the beauty is, because it's, there's no exposition, but it is carried along by the dialogue of the characters, I think, is its most valuable player, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
It's anarchic. It's certainly subversive. And it's a little bit grubby around the edges, which is kind of why I liked it. I've written it, it's the perfect conjoining of old school BBC elocution and gob-fueled punk anger, which is almost an encapsulation of chatting to Pat on the show that time, if you see what I mean. He's a very well-spoken guy, but you can see he's got that, there's a punk aspect to Pat, isn't there, you know.
Yeah.
It's the setting is suit-wearing 1970s Fleet Street, but the attitude is all the Sweeney, you know, it's got that sort of flashy, you know, flares and parties, and let's put our keys in a bowl, and, you know, this sort of thing. You know, the permissive society of the late 60s and early 70s carrying through. You know, really cool stuff. It's very satirical. I fully expect that Pat and Kev will be getting phone calls from people in the comic industry of the time, asking them, is this actually about me? Is this person it meant to be me? Because it really does shine out, you know. What he does is he takes stories of imaginary characters. There's the Caning Commando, who appears quite a few times, who's a sort of slightly S&M character, BDSM, is that the phrase? BDSM, yeah. Character, who beats the Germans up by whacking them on the backside with his cane, and is dressed like a sort of old school teacher with a, you know, a mortarboard and all that sort of thing. It's basically the transition that you got from all the people who've been fighting in the war and, you know, went to work with pipes, wearing bow ties and stuff, and wrote comics, you know, as their day job, and then went home to their wives. And it's the transition from that to the sort of new wave of writers that we sort of saw certainly at the start of 2000 AD and beyond, you know, like John Wagner and Pat and all these sort of people who, you know, just took the art form to a sort of next level, really. It's getting a release at the 2000 AD 40th anniversary event. Sorry about this, but you've just missed the 99p version of the ebook. I think it's gone up to £3 now on Amazon. It's well worth getting. And I know that today you can order the physical copy of the book from Amazon. If you go to Pat's site, if you go to Millsverse, millsverse.com/reademandweep, you can find out some really hilarious stuff about the book. Well, the back matter is all faked letters between the writer and the publisher, and the publisher saying, what the fuck, you can't write this. You know, these sort of fake sort of letters between them. It's really good stuff. Head over to @Millsverse on Twitter or @PatMillsComics, and you'll find more details of it. Absolutely. I've not read a book that's cheered me up and made me laugh so much. It's got a real sort of edge to it. It really is not like the dross that you see in W.H. Smith these days. You know, these sort of page-turning dross books that, you know, people read on the train, they all read the same book. Get a copy of this and see where there's a little bit of edge. There's a lot of teeth to it, you know. I think the phrase I used in the review was, it will flick you in the balls with a towel. It will definitely do that. Yeah. He wants to wind you up. And it's the first of a series, although it does have a conclusion. You'll see that it certainly goes somewhere and something happens. I won't spoil anything, but yeah, it certainly has a conclusion to it. But there's a mystery that will run through into the next book. Really, really great stuff. If you're at the 2000 AD convention, there's a good chance you'll find me, because I'll be behind the table. So come and get a copy. It's 296 pages, so for three quid and some change, digitally, it's a good buy. So get yourself a copy. On the 10th of February, there's a signing at Gosh Comics in the evening, and then the following day is the anniversary convention. So pop along. There you go. That's my one.
Nice. So Dan, what's your recommendation?
It's issue one of The United by Johnny Cannon.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a good
Johnny one. Just started selling this book on Big Cartel, and I bought some issues. I kind of got the prices wrong, so he sent me through a few other copies. So I've got 1 to 5 now, and fantastic. Really enjoyed it. It came Thursday, and I kind of blasted through most of them. I'm only going to review the first comic, but it's a postmodern superhero comic, very similar in some aspects to Vanguard. It's probably why I enjoyed it so much. And the team comprises of Battalion, Big Cat, Boudica, Britannia, Eddie Speed, and the Mighty Scotsman, which is my favourite character. I'm not sure if we've seen a superhero fly around in a kilt before. Mm. I'm sure it must have been done, but it's fantastic seeing it.
That's a problem if you're a sort of traditionalist, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah. It's great because all the kind of the various team members have got kind of real big personalities and egos, and they're kind of bouncing off each other all the way through the comic. There's one of them where one of them pops up on Jonathan Ross's chat show and sort of has a bit of a back and forth, and they're very much sort of like celebrity superheroes in the public eye. As the comic plays out, there's kind of like an ongoing arc of something sinister going on. Yeah. But it's really good. I'm really impressed. I'll definitely check it out. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought I'm going to read the first issue and then do the review, and then I was like, right, I've got to pick up the second, and then just blast it all. Yeah, all three of them in one sitting. And I highly recommend you get all of them and then just read it through, because after one or two, you want the rest.
Yeah.
You can pick that up if you go to CannonHillComics.com. I'm sure they have the link to the shop there. Or you can follow Johnny on Twitter at Cannon Hill Comics, comic. And because I was the first person to order from the shop, he drew me a great picture of two characters.
Yeah,
oh, nice one.
It's downstairs now, but I can't remember what they said. They mentioned Vanguard, which is great. But yeah, great comic. Really enjoyed it.
You love an ego stroke, don't you, Dan?
Yeah. So, I was going to talk about it anyway, and then when I saw that coming, I was like, hooray. I bumped the comic I was going to talk about till next week.
Oh, okay. Oh,
nice.
Cool.
Yeah. Nice. I bumped a comic.
And I can't find it.
Yeah. I was going to talk about a superhero themed book this week, but I'm kind of glad I didn't now that you've had that rousing approval of The United there.
Yeah. It's great because I think it's issue 4. I can't remember the name of it now, but basically the team kind of undergoes a bit of a breakup, and it changes from The United to another word about breaking up. It's really well done.
Right, is it?
Nice. Oh, dear. Always there to just put people off, aren't you, Tony?
That's me.
Yeah, awesome. So check that out. That'll be in the show notes, etc. My book that I chose this week, it's an image book. I like a high concept book. I think they're kind of harder. They're harder and harder to come by these days. It's certainly in mainstream sort of titles, I think. But the book, the collection that I chose to talk about, has one of the best. It's a very simple concept, but so well done. Have you guys heard of the book The Beauty?
Yes.
No. Yeah.
By Jeremy Hahn, Jason A. Hurley, and John Rausch.
It's been going a while now, hasn't it?
It has. 10, this, 14, yeah, something like that, yeah, it? I think the second volume is out. I got the first volume
right
just after Christmas, because it's a book that I've wanted to check out for quite some time. And the classic image, you know, first trade draws you in. And these six issues are amazing. Now, the high concept is there's a sexually transmitted disease in the world that if you get it, you automatically become beautiful. Yeah. So
I think I must have caught that.
You caught that ages ago, Tony. You've always had it. You're probably patient zero.
Yeah.
But here's the synopsis of it. Modern society is obsessed with outward beauty. What if there was a way to guarantee you could become more and more beautiful every day? What if it was a sexually transmitted disease? In the world of the beauty, physical perfection is only one sexual encounter away. The vast majority of the population has taken advantage of it, but detectives Vaughan and Foster will soon discover it comes at a terrible cost. Now they'll have to find their way past corrupt politicians, vengeful federal agents, and a terrifying mercenary out to collect the price on their heads. So that's just it's like a fantastic TV show. You know, that I wouldn't be surprised if it snapped up for some sort of adaptation at some point.
Yeah.
You know, because you've got that perfect high concept, and I like that it talks about society. It's not, you know, if you think about it, a sexually transmitted disease that makes you beautiful, people are going out and getting it left and right in this series. You know, people, they're going to prostitutes to get it. Yeah, some people are totally against it. Some people are having it. There's one character whose wife, he's always seen her as beautiful every day, so he didn't notice until he slept with her, and he wakes up the next day and he's physically handsome. He didn't realise. Okay. Yes. Do you know what I mean? The way it characterises people is brilliant. I love the way it's sort of written, and it had me hooked. You know, from page one, I just absolutely devoured the first trade, and it's a nice arc. It kind of ends, but it's still, it's a good first volume. It's got that first story, but I want to know what more about.
So what, that woman cheated on her husband?
I think she may have. Yeah.
Okay.
Or she had it, and then he caught it from her. But then, that's the thing, is he gets it, and then he has to question, when did she get it? Because he's not sure when she got it. And because of the beauty is a disease, everyone's getting it. But this is a crime story. You know, because these police, the people that have got the beauty, are essentially spontaneously combusting. They're starting to die. They're burning up from the inside. So, and these detectives are investigating the first death, and it becomes more and more prevalent, and there's political parties trying to get involved, and there's cover-ups and everything. There's a lot going on, but what I like about it is the character. You know, I felt like I was in for the ride with these two detectives who are going along with it, and one of them is an attractive female. She's actually got it, but she has a problem that she got it. It was just a one night stand, and then she wakes up and she's got it, and she hates it. But now that they know that people are dying because of it, it cranks up the tension, because you know you've got a timer on your hands before you die horribly. So I highly recommend this book, The Beauty. I mean, it's one the concept had it on my wish list for some time, and I'm totally glad I got it. I hope the second volume carries up the sort of pace and the theme. Yeah, so definitely, I mean, because it's Image, you can get it in your local comic book stores, you know, your Waterstones, your Amazon, wherever. But if you want a nice, concise, high concept story that isn't capes, and you know, there's not kung fu and guns or whatever, but there's a lot going on, and I loved it, so check it out. So that's my
last one.
So Gary, what do you want to recommend to our lovely listeners?
One of the books I read the start of last week was the first three issues of Supernut. It's a 5-issue run from Michael Nielsen, who writes and wrote it. It's a very ambitious and very large book. It's about an astronaut who transcends into becoming this supernaut being who can cross time and space. But the book itself is such a great variation on art, with some of the timepieces where it goes back in time to the time of the moon landings and stuff like that. Large concept, because you're crossing different parallel universes, and he's trying to put together these artifacts together to take on God and to stop him unraveling reality because he's had enough. So fairly heavy subjects in there, but it's well worth the effort. As I say, I've read the first three books, which is the first half. I've had the other two sent through to me as well. But it's a cracking book, published through, I think it's 215 Inc. They've got a website.
I know, yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
It sounds like the sort of concept. Yeah. It sounds very Grant Morrison-like, do you know what I mean? Mm. That sort of heading.
Yeah. If you see the covers, it looks like a book you would imagine the likes of Image producing. It's got that kind of vibe. It's similar to the bigger bang that they've had released previously. But it's a great read and something that you would probably have to sit down and really take the time to read it because it's so complex. But it's well worth it.
Oh, nice one! I might give that a go. Yeah.
How do you get on with like really complex books? Anyone?
Well, all of us. Yeah, I like them. Yeah, I like, if I've got the patience for them. I mean, I suppose because I grew up reading stuff like Philip K. Dick and, you know, Frank Herbert and all these sort of people. I enjoy it. I think you invest in it, don't you? You know. Yeah.
But when it comes to a complex book and story, do you think the balance of art and dialogue is hugely important? For instance, if it's a very word-heavy book, do you prefer the art to be slightly simpler?
I don't know. I think it works often if it's a creator who draws and writes. I think, for example, Cerebus is an extremely complex book, but it works because he knows what he's doing. Or you've got an art and a writing team that works so very closely that, you know, they work hand in glove, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes that's better.
Shippernaut was written and drawn by the one person, and as you say, it just seems to work a hell of a lot better.
Yeah.
When it comes to a large concept book like that, the lettering, I think, starts making a bigger impact on a book as well.
Interesting, yeah.
Because
yeah, I see what you mean.
There's so much more complex language to take it on board, and to fit it all in, and to still make it readable is probably a bigger challenge. But the payoff, if it's done pretty much spot on, is worth it.
Yeah, I think when you see someone like Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, because they're so in simpatico, aren't they? They know what they're doing. I think sometimes that works well as well. You know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds cool.
That's awesome.
It's got a good title as well. I love that title.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. Another one in the bag. Another successful one in the bag. Thank you very much for joining us this week, Gary. It's been.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. Yeah, good. Yeah.
So, and everyone out there, be sure to check out Comics Anonymous. You'll get the link, etc., in a minute.
Yep.
And we're always full of links on this show, aren't we? Aren't we?
Yeah.
We're full of everything.
Full of something.
Yeah. What do you think we're full of?
Mostly there's, shit.
There's yeah, so like an Alabama different... hot pocket.
When Dan gives us the outtake, if you're completely offended by it, then there's several different ways you can let us know about it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any events or anything that we need to know, also let us know. You can also let us know tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And also get involved with the group Awesome Comics Talk. There's a lot of discussion going on there. Thankfully, it's not just a load of old waffle. You know, we've got some good people on there with good opinions and good notes and everything. Well, isn't
it? Yeah. Really good. We had a really interesting talk about pull lists in comic shops.
Yeah, we did. That's become a subject to the moment, really. I think there's a few other people who've been posting about that, haven't they?
Yeah.
Because if I was a kind of a proprietor of a comic shop, I would consider some of those options that some of those people put forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
if not action them, consider them.
Next time,
Okay Comics have posted, didn't they, with their pull list cupboard and saying, look, this is where our business lies, is in this, you know, the people collecting their stuff.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. We'll have to discuss such a thing more in depth next time we had a comic book owner. Comic book shop owner.
Yeah, retailer. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, retailer. Yeah. Oh, so much to look forward to, folks. Bet you can't wait. but get involved in Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. Just search for it, join the group, and get involved. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. Those things help get the word out about the show. And plus, we were talking about reviews. It's just going to stroke our ego, isn't it? We all have a good stroke on this show. Some of us doing it now. Thank you for listening, whether it be on Stitcher or on the Podnose Network. And where can people find us online, etc., for all our wonderful entertainment, Tony?
Ezohyz on Twitter, EZOHYZ. Go to downthetubes.net. I think four things have gone up this week, actually. There's a Nobrow review, there's a review of the book I did last week, and a couple of other things, and the aforementioned interview with Gareth Hopkins, which he did really well on. So yeah, pop over there.
Lovely. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and Vanguard issue 13 launches on the 25th of Jan, and you can read that at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and find out about my comic on theredmousefrommars.com. Gary, you legend, where can people find you online and your wonderful website?
The website is comicsanonymous.co.uk. A Facebook page as well, where I tend to run competitions every now and again.
Oh,
and
nice.
You can get me on Twitter or at comicsanonblog.
Yes, and there you go. And thank you for getting involved with all of our discussions as well.
Well, yeah, cheers.
Thanks for having me on.
That's all right. You're welcome back anytime. Next time, bring Haribo. That's all I've got to say. And there you go, folks. Another one in the bag. Look forward. We got an exciting show next week as well, especially if you're going to True Believers at the beginning of February. So look forward to the announcement next week for who we got on for there. So have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. You know, don't judge comics too harshly, because we love them all, don't we? We're full of love on this show.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
We do indeed. And if you're a bad reviewer, we know who you are, and we're coming for you. So everyone else, have a brilliant week, and as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
See ya, bye.
But first, Alabama Hot Pocket. Hit.
This is fucking grim.
Go for it.
It's Alabama Hot Pocket, the art of separating the vagina lips and taking a shat inside. In brackets, and possibly having sex with it afterwards.
Possibly.
What?
Possibly.
And
the caption is, Shania decided her Virginia vagina needed some lube, so her boyfriend performed an Alabama Hot Pocket.
Oh God!
Fucking out!
What sickness is there out there?
Yeah, the Awesome Comic Podcast doesn't endorse this.
Yeah, well, probably everyone's done it, haven't they?
Yeah.
It's grim.
I'm so glad we didn't say that on the show.